last week.
Do we come in on this yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We go opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No wives, just women.
Okay. Speaking of wives, we're going to talk about wives today. Is she coming? Okay. Last week we started discussing the great split between David and Shaul. All right. Now, and today we're going to continue to discuss it and notice very fascinating themes that occur within the text.
Yeah.
So we're going to read the story, and then we're going to read the story behind the story, and see that what the Navi is trying to convey to us, and the similarities that occur, and see what the Midrash is trying to convey to us, and hopefully maybe learn a lesson or two from it, and understand the unbelievable, the difficult time that David has trying to navigate this maze. You know, it's a crazy life he's trying to lead. Okay. Parashat Yotzei. So as is our custom, we'll read through the chapter, and then hopefully I'll be able to, after we read through it, point out some things that you might otherwise not have noticed beforehand. So Shaul decided on chapter 19, Shaul decides, you know what, he tells his son and all his servants to kill David. So how's that? You know, on the one hand, Shaul wants to kill this guy, and at the same time, his son is his biggest supporter. Right? And so this is the first time, actually, we've had the king come out and say explicitly what he wants. Until now, we've had subterfuge. Remember, he was sitting around, and what do you know, the spear ended up in the wall, right, you know, and he was upset at him, and he's mad at him, and then he got a little less subtle. He tried to send David out, and he said, you know, kill a thousand policemen, and then come back to me. And David does it. So each time it's getting more and more brazen, more and more blatant. So now, Shaul says, you know what, I want to get rid of him. Okay?
Is there a reason why his name is spelled differently?
Yehonatan?
One says Yehonatan, one says Yehonatan.
I noticed it. They talk about it, they say it's all the same. I mean, why sometimes yes, why sometimes no? You probably could study it and see if you could figure out. I don't know. Probably. Vayageh Yehonatan the David Lemor. So David, Yonatan says to David, my father Shaul wants to kill you.
If you haven't figured out before now.
If you haven't gotten it until now, my father really wants to kill you. Stay here, right? In the morning, sit and hide. And hiding v'nach beita means you should hide. I will go out. I'm going to stand next to my father in the field. Asher atasha, I'm right where you are. Va'ani adaber b'chai el avi, and I'm going to speak to my father. V'ra'iti ma'av, he got it hilach. And we'll see what he says. Now, it is very interesting. How does Shaul, I mean, Shaul can't just kill David. He can't. David is a war hero. He is a general in the army. And he's also his son-in-law. So when Shaul says, and he says to his people, l'hamid et David, What does he say? What does he really say to them?
Someone else has got to do it.
No, but if the President of the United States, I mean, let's assume that there's some kind of logical government, said, you know, oh, I don't know who's this, I don't know what the equivalent would be.
Well, the Kennedy assassination is a great conspiracy theory.
Whatever. But how do you get that done? I mean, he's not saying,
like
he's saying it to his son. He's saying, make it look like an accident?
Make it look...
I don't know. Do it without it coming back to me.
No, that's impossible. It's impossible. Because he's commanding Yonatan, who loves David, to kill him. Mm-hmm. He knows how he feels. It's his son-in-law. He knows how his son feels about him. So what way could the king accomplish to get David killed? There's only one way to do it.
Getting somebody else to
do it. So you're thinking like, you're thinking mob hit.
Make him look like he's setting up a rebellion.
Oh.
Then he loses people.
Correct. I mean, David has his popular support. So Shaul has to try him. And has to convict him of rebellion. Which is easy to do. You can try to convict anybody of anything.
Which is why you tell your son that you want to kill him.
Correct.
So he'll set him up for you without even...
Well, right. I mean, but it's clear that, and the reason it's clear, I saw in one of the books, you'll see, is the language he uses. Yonatan spoke to David, good. Yonatan said the following. Ki lo chata lach, v'chimasav tov lacha ma'od. Right? What is the word that he uses? The interesting word. Don't sin towards David, because he hasn't sinned towards you, and his actions are good. Meaning, Yonatan uses the argument to Shaul, saying, you're going to try to convict him of Mori B'malchut, of rebelling against the king. It's not going to work. Why? Because he's never sinned against you, and what you will do will be a sin. What I'm trying to say is, the language that Yonatan uses against Shaul indicates what Shaul had tried to do. Shaul was trying to use the system of the courts in order to accomplish what he wants. Says Yonatan, it's not going to fly. But Yasam et nafsho b'chapo, he put his soul in his hands. V'yachet ha-plishti. V'yas Hashem tshua gdola l'chol Yisrael. V'aita v'atisma. You saw, you were happy that God saved all the Jewish people. V'lama techeta b'dam naki l'hamit et David chinam. This is the language he uses. Why should you sin with clean blood to kill David for nothing? Meaning, Dad, you think you're going to convict him of rebellion. All you're going to be doing is murdering. Because he didn't do anything. Pasuk Vav, Vayishma Shaul b'kol Yonatan. So Shaul, here's what his son says. Vayishava Shaul. Shaul swears, Chai Hashem im yumat. That means, by God, as God is alive, he will not die. See, it's interesting. You notice a progressive descent in Shaul. In the beginning, he just doesn't like him. He can't stand him. And then he tries to sort of send him out on his way. And now he's trying to get him killed legally. And what are we going to find afterwards?
He's trying to do it.
That'll be, right, whatever. And if that doesn't work, you know, then he's going to send the army out against him. And you see this sort of building. Vayikra Yonatan to David. Yonatan calls to David. Vayagelo Yonatan et kol advarim ha'ile. So he tells him everything. Vayaveh Yonatan et David el Shaul. So Yonatan brought David to Shaul. Vayihi lefanav ketmol shoshom. And it was before him. Ketmol shoshom means like the day before and the day before that. Okay? Now, by the way, the Mefarshim asked the following question. What in the world was the purpose of having David hide in the field? And we see that this happens a couple of different times. What is that? What else is going to happen? Anybody know? It's going to happen again. Familiar story? Everybody's tired. Come on! Remember the story of Machar HaChodesh? We're going to get to it. Right? It's going to be Rosh Chodesh, and then you stay in the field, and I'm going to shoot the arrows.
Yeah.
Anyone? Anyone? Okay. Forget it.
Vaguely.
What? That's not ringing a bell at all?
Vaguely.
Oh, the story, yeah.
Who goes out during the Haftarah? Oh, I'm sorry. Everybody goes out during the Haftarah. Okay. Yeah. What?
They both could do equally. Don't worry.
No.
So what's the answer? So why does he go out?
What do you think? I'm asking you. Why do you think he makes him hide in the field? Like right there. To be right there. So there's two possible reasons. What would be the point of having David hide in the field to hear what Shaul has to say?
So he's close at hand.
And
so
therefore...
So he knows
what he's doing. Oh, what do you know? Hey, Dad, here's David. So he can't change his mind. He made the oath and he brings his answers to him. That's one. What's the other possibility? There's another possibility they bring.
But he knows exactly what he's doing.
Well, so David has a sense, because if I was David, I'd be a little nervous. So if the king finally relents, so David would be there to hear it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes a lot of sense. Sometimes, you know, a guy tells you it's okay, and it ain't really okay, and you want to hear it from the king's mouth himself. Now, there's a little double entendre. Look what he says. He says, Vayihi lefanav ketmol shilshom. What does that mean? How do they translate that? And he was before him, like, yesterday and the day before that. Where are you?
Yesterday and before.
Right. So why is that? There's a subtle little dig there. What was David's predicament before Shaul the day before and the day before that?
Shaul hated him and was trying to kill him.
Correct. Right. So on the one hand, the implication is things were better as they were before that. But if you think about it, how were things before?
Not good.
Right, so it went back from I want to kill you to I hate you and I'm not going to tell you that I want to kill you. You know what I'm saying? So it didn't really correct very much. Even though outwardly Shaul had recanted, he clearly had not inwardly. But Tosef Amul Chamal, he yotz in the middle of a war, Vayetzei Pasuk Chet, Vayetzei David, Vayulachem Vaplishtim, he fought the Plishtim, Vayach Behem Makah Gedola, he smote him, Vayanusu Mipanav. Right, and the Plishtim fled. But again, what happens? So what's going to happen? David succeeds. Right. He ruach Hashem ra'ah el Sa'ul. For who bebeito Yosef, sitting in his house. V'chanito biyado. The spear is in his hand. V'David minagein bayad. And David's plan. Right, you know. What happens? V'yivakei Sha'ul l'hakot b'chanit b'David u'bekir. Well, you know, Shaul, he decided he wants to spear him. V'David nas v'yimaleit b'layla hahu. I'm sorry, let's skip the line. V'yiftar mipnei Sha'ul. So David, patur, he exits stage left. V'yachet t'chanit b'kir. Boom. Right? And he misses. V'David nas v'yimaleit b'layla hahu. And David is out of there. He's had enough.
About time.
What?
It's about time. You can't, after all this, even though he says, yeah, you know, I'm not going to kill you, he goes back and he's playing again, sitting with him. And
now, I'm left with a question.
Weird?
What do you mean? That David is...
I mean, he knows this guy hates him. He's smart. He knows all these things the guy did.
Yeah.
He knows this guy, you know, and he's back playing with him, you know.
He's not this guy. Who is he?
He's the king.
Right. Yeah, you're, remember, take away your democratic, you know, all men are created equal. Whatever the king says goes. You worship the king. The king, you're subservient to him.
Even if you know he wants to kill you?
He said he wouldn't.
King's word.
What?
Okay.
Now, the thing I struggle with, I mean, you think David's naive?
I don't understand why he's back there.
Well,
after all of this.
Let me ask you this question. Let's say you believe that the king really was trying to kill you. What do you do?
Get out of there.
He'll still get you.
What?
He'll still find you.
He'll find you. So you want to hope. You want to kind of believe that this is all a bad dream. You know, look at it from David's perspective. What did he just do? You went out, you fought a hard battle, and let's not take it for granted. You're a general, you fought a battle, war is brutal. You come back, and what thanks do you get? You know, the king's trying to kill you. What are you supposed to do? Anybody ever seen that? There was a movie about the Romans? Was there a movie like that about the Roman general? No? Nobody was talking about that? It was a really good movie. Gladiator. That's the one. You know, and he's this general in the emperor's army, and then the guy dies. And the next thing you know, they murdered your children. There's no running away. You know, they're everywhere. So, on the one hand, I think David...
Because he has to be, though, so connected to him. There's no running away. He can be, you know, why is he in the room?
What do you want of him? He's his father-in-law, too.
Okay.
But let's not forget that. He just married the guy's daughter, which makes for an interesting, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, as we'll say, right? Are you coming for turkey? Who's carving? Who's carving? You know? So, you feel bad for him in a way. The question I really want to ask you is, when it says about the Hi Ruach Hashem Ra'ah El Sha'ul, to what degree do we want to believe that God is motivating Sha'ul's mood swings? Meaning, the Navi could have said, Vatihi Ruach Ra'ah El Sha'ul. One gets a sense, and I don't think, and this is not just this time, that it says very often, it's Ruach Hashem Ra'ah. That God is deliberately, how should we say this, removing himself. That sometimes Shaul had his euphoria, the spirit of God, and sometimes God gave him this negative spirit. And that this is one of the ways of bringing about his downfall. We're going to see that this is his downfall. It's a gradual downfall. But God is motivating this. So in a sense, what is God doing? In a sense, God is the one that's causing this whole thing.
But is he really?
Well.
Or is he just putting Shaul...
If God puts Shaul into a manic, depressive state every time that David succeeds.
But Shaul still has the choice not to react a certain way.
Right? I don't know. I think that's hard. If you really
say... It is hard.
Any doctors here?
This was before the advent of lithium.
Right. Before lithium and before Zoloft and Prozac what do they call the inhibitors, whatever they're called? Right. Those...
Serotonin
reaction. Forget the medical terms. It's by the Ruach Hashem Ra'ah El Sha'ul. The Navi says it in that way, that this spirit, this negative spirit of God, this evil spirit, comes to Sha'ul. One gets a sense that he, you know, so can he control it?
Doesn't look like it.
No.
That doesn't seem so. Right, meaning, it's his son-in-law. Why is his son-in-law playing music in the first place?
Make him feel better.
Make him feel better. And all of a sudden, like, Shaul clearly has lost all sense. And, you know, David's loyal, and David wants nothing but to serve the king. There's no logic here. Okay? So then, what is God trying to do? I mean, if you look at it that way, then you start to see this whole, you know, it's not just a...
He's trying to make the transition. You know, set up the transition. So if Saul's out of his mind, then, you know, they need a new king.
Okay, but how were the other kings? How was Saul appointed? Out of the blue. Yeah. Okay, but I'm going to ask you if you see a process here, and if God is motivating the process, what's the point of the process? We'll see a little later on.
It's like you don't really need Saul to go crazy, because he dies. The Navi says David's king, not Yonatan. Yonatan respects David to the point that...
Well, even beyond that, Yonatan gets killed too.
But what I'm saying...
That was the prophecy, by the way. You will die and your children will die too.
So it's really not necessary. Could it just... Does it have to set up this way in order to get Saul to go into the battlefield?
I don't know.
In the first place.
I don't know.
Because before this point, he wouldn't go into the battlefield.
I don't know. How do we get out? Vayishlach Shaul Malachim El Beit David L'Shamro U'Lahamito Babokir. So now he's had enough. David runs away. Where did David go? He went home. Oh, I know where you live. I'm your father-in-law. Right? So he sends these guards to go guard him. U'Lahamito Babokir. To kill him in the morning. Vatagev David Michal Ishto Lemar. So his wife says, Imencha Memaleit Ef Nafshecha Halayla Machar Atam Umat. If you don't get out of here tonight, you're dead. By the morning, you're dead. So she lowers him out the window, and he runs away.
Why didn't she flee to her father?
What?
Why didn't she flee to her father?
Because there was no talking to him.
You tell me the answer.
He was a demolition man.
Why?
Because he's crazy.
Aside from that?
He's the king.
Woman.
Yeah, she's his daughter. Who are you? Right? She's the
lower.
Yeah, yeah. I think flee to him? What, for your husband? He's going to kill your husband anyway. What's the point? I guess so. That's true. You know, it reminds me of The Godfather. You know, when the son-in-law, you know, goes against the father-in-law and he has to be killed. He's got to be killed. Nothing to do. What are you supposed to do? You know what I'm talking about? That's a good movie. Ooh, yeah. Same thing. When I read the book. Same thing. Okay. Vatikach Michal et ha-trafim. Michal took the... How do they translate trafim?
Mannequins.
The mannequins? Interesting. So that follows the opinion of Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says that trafim... I think it's about one of the Ralbag movie also says. She says, what was the point of the trafim? It was a little statuette made in the form of her husband. Why? So when he goes out to war, they didn't have pictures. So it'd be like this, you know, a remembrance, in order to remember him. Batasan el hamita, so she put it in the bed. The eight kvir ha'izim, sama mirashatav, and she put this kvir, I think it was like a water bottle, made from goat skin, on his head. Batachas ba'baget, and she covered him with a blanket. Right? It's right out of the movies. What did she do? She took the pillows. Mm-hmm. She bunched him up. She put a little hair coming out of the side, covered it with a blanket. What do you know? Chasid Yudalin, Vayishlach Shaul Malachim Lakach Et David, Batomer, Cholehu. So the messengers come in. No, let's go get the guy up. She says he's sick. This is my favorite part. Vayavo Malachim. One second. Vayishlach Shaul Et Malachim Lirot Et David Leimor. So that he sent him to see David, saying, "Halu oto ba'mita elai la'amito." So this is my favorite, right? He sends the guards to go get David to put him to death. So the idiot guards, when they see he's sick, they come back to the king and they say, "He's sick. You idiots! I'm going to kill him. Who cares if he's sick?" You know, like
make him feel better.
Right? Come on, make him feel better. So they didn't, but they didn't, you know.
The guys,
the
Monty Python.
Yeah, like the Monty Python guys. You know, like so we're gonna stay here. Right, you go. You know, What are you thinking? You know, so okay. It's almost like this cheap trick. It's too silly to work.
It actually did.
Yeah, it actually did. Vayavau ha-malachim. So they come to get him. Hinei ha-tzrafim al-hamita. Ukvir ha-rizim mi-reshetov. They pull out the blanket. Let's go, David. What do you know? It's a mannequin and it's, you know, goat hair. Vayomer Shaul el-michal. So Shaul said to Michal, Lama kacha rimitani vatashalchias oivin vayimalet. Why did you lie to me and send away my enemy to escape? Atamu Michal El Shaul. Little Michal says, fascinating. Hu amar li elai shalcheni lama amitech. Dad, he threatened to kill me. Mm. What does Ida think she should have said? Right. The father says to his daughter, why did you lie to me? Why did you let him get away? And I would have said, Dad, what is she supposed to say to him? What, you married me to him? What do you expect me to do? You know, I'm supposed to cling to my husband? I'm not supposed to cling to my father? What do you want? It's very, her response is fascinating.
Then she just go with him.
Where's she supposed to go?
Wherever he's going.
Well, I could answer that question. Why don't you go with him?
Somebody
that's the truth. There's a better reason. She called him back. She's not in danger. And where, how's she going to run? You also, let's not think of, you know, Pocahontas here. You know, she's the king's daughter. And raised in a little bit of lap of luxury. She's not, you know.
High maintenance.
Right, high maintenance. Well, as we'll see later on, very high maintenance. You're going to see. So her answer is very fascinating to me. And you wonder, why did she say that? She could have said any number of things, but she doesn't say that. V'David barach, David runs away. V'ayimalek v'yavo el Shmuel haramata. Ah, so where does he go? You know, where should he go? Go to Shmuel. And he goes to Shmuel, and you wonder, you know what he says to Shmuel? V'yagid lo eit kol ashes asalo Shaul. Right? Shmuel tells him everything that Shaul did to him. Shmuel went to the Vayot. I don't know exactly what happened in the Vayot. What is it? Why they went to this place? So he went in the Ramah and they hung out in the Vayot. Which is a very, I mean, if you were David and you went to go see Shmuel, what would you say to Shmuel?
Help me.
More.
What's going to happen to me?
More.
He's trying to kill me.
The king is trying to kill
me. I will come to the prophet and say, thanks for nothing. Here you are, you made me the king, and you know.
Does he know he's going to be the king?
Shmuel anointed him.
Oh, okay.
Right? Look what he did to me. You know, I'm carpeting the rock in a hard place. What am I supposed to do? And what does Shmuel say to him? You know, we don't know what Shmuel says to him. Shmuel clearly does not have the answers for him. Shmuel can only offer temporary solace. Where are we? One second. Pasuk Yotet. Vayugav Shaul leimor hinei David binuvayot biramah binayot biramah. David is. They told Shaul where he is. Shaul knows where exactly where he is. It's almost like the Palestinian Authority lab deal, right? So we had our thing with the GSS guy, he said, Avi Dichter, he said, let's be clear. They know exactly what's going on. They know when it happens and where it's going to, they know everything. So when people say, oh, it's this terrorist faction or it's that terrorist faction, it's baloney. Because they know, and they know, usually they fund it, and if they don't fund it, then they let it happen. And they could stop it easily. It's a very interesting comment. So Shaul, I mean, if you're the king, you have your people everywhere. Because like, you control everything. You control the borders, you control the roads, you control the taxes, you control everything. It's very much like here. It's very hard to hide. You know, eventually somebody will see you and somebody will find you. So Saul said messengers to get David. So they saw the lahaka, the group of prophets prophesizing. Excuse me, Gaga. Shmuel Omeid Nitzav Alehem. And Shmuel is standing over them. So what happened? Shmuel was standing there, you know, with the prophecy. And as soon as they come into his perimeter, they start prophesizing also. And what happens to them? So they're out of the picture. You know, as soon as they get the prophecy, then forget it. They're gone. So they told Saul what happened. So the another says, right? So they also got into the prophecy deal. He sent a third group. They also got sucked into the prophecy thing. So he says, forget it. You know, if you want to get a job done, if you want a job done, do it yourself. So he finally goes to Haramata. He went to the Bor HaGadol, to the great well. So he's asking around, where's Shmuel and David? And they say, here he's in Nevayot, in Ramah. Now, what is Saul's relationship with Shmuel? Do you anybody remember? What's his relationship? What happened the last time they met?
Nothing. What?
Shmuel told him, you will die, right? And somebody else will succeed you. And you will not survive, and your children will die also, and we're never going to meet again. So you don't want to, like, this is not somebody you want to see. You know, and Shmuel left him very, very harshly. And he was supposed to be the king. So Saul is not looking for a confrontation with Shmuel.
What's the point of this last pasuk? Where is he? He knows where he is. He sent people three times.
Some say, the way I understood it was that he was trying to avoid the prophecy periphery. You know what I'm saying? Anybody who gets too close gets sucked in. And they have this prophecy. And he also begins to prophesize. He takes off his clothing, and we'll see what that means. And he starts to prophesize in front of Shmuel. And he falls down. It says naked. So Rashi explains naked means, Arom means, look what it says, Chavdalin. Rashi, everybody see the Rashi of Chavdalin? Bigadav, Bigdei Malchut, Lubosh Bigdei HaTalmidim. He takes off his kingly garments and puts on the children's garments. Vayipol Arum. Okay, it says v'nafal barshan. That word barshan, Targum Yonatan. What does barshan mean? It says v'nafal artilai. U'b'shem Rabbi Menachem. Rabbi Menachem says sheshama mipi aravi. He heard from some Arab that the word barshan means echad barshan b'lashon aravi. What is barshan in the language, Arab language?
Meshuga.
It's very interesting. So what happened to Shaul as soon as he got the prophecy? He
went nuts. Or
not
visibly.
What?
Visibly.
He went nuts there, right. He visibly said he took off his clothes and he put on the other clothes.
Could you explain?
That's what they say. Ah, Shaul's also a prophet.
What Could exactly I... happens? That he, I mean, they're not real prophets, are they? I mean, what's happening here? People are saying they're prophets because they're surrounded by this? They're not real prophets like...
What does that mean to be a prophet?
Well, you're getting Nebuah from Hashem.
Okay,
no?
What does Nebuah mean? So you think Nebuah means that God tells you the future. Right?
Okay.
So what is Nebuah? What does it mean to say that you become a prophet?
Isn't Nebuah just speaking with God?
Speaking with God?
Giving God's actual, some kind of message towards you in some manner.
So what does it sound like it is here?
Like your brain's overloading.
What?
Sounds like your brain's overloading.
Well, there's a good example of Moshe. Chumash says the following. When does the first prophecy happen? Outside of Moshe Rabbeinu. Outside of Moshe. In the Chumash, the Torah tells us that it happens with a story in the middle, I think, is Baha'alosva. Remember the whole thing they wanted to meet, and Moshe says, I can't handle it on my own. So God says, okay, make a lottery. Right? And then pick 70 people, and part of my spirit, listen to this, V'yaradati v'dabarti imach sham, says, God says to Moshe, I'm going to come down and I'm going to speak with you. V'atzalti min haruach asher alecha misamti aleihem. And I'm going to take the spirit that's on you, and I'm going to place it on them. See, it's interesting. The instant metaphor, I think, is like electricity. Moshe Rabbeinu is the conductor. Right? If you get close enough, they get energized also. But what is this spirit of God? One second. So what happens? So that's what they do. Blah, 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 blah. Here it says, God came down on in the cloud and spoke to Moshe. So God, I don't know what the word means, took from the spirit on him, and God placed it on these 70 people. And when the spirit rested on them, they prophesied. So what does it mean to prophesy? You tell me, what does it sound like? It doesn't mean to tell a future, and it doesn't mean to talk to God.
And it doesn't mean they're doing the same thing like Shmuel was doing. Because then if it's this wonderful thing, everybody would come. You know what I'm saying? All you have to do is get near this person,
right?
Why wouldn't everybody just be getting near him and getting the spirit? And
is it just feeling God's presence?
It's more than that. Do me a favor. In my office, there should be a red book, a red Rambam, Mada, a Rambam Mada. Say it's called a Rambam Mada. In my office, maybe on my desk. Check on the piles. Okay, I'm very good at that. We live in a world where our everyday existence is extremely removed from an awareness of God. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because... And I was having an extensive discussion with Amina about this. She's talking about it sort of today. But thank you. I'll see if I can find what I'm looking for. But you can't really, because you can't really live your life. Let's say you lived your life in such a way where every day, everywhere you are, you're able to experience tangibly the spiritual existence of God.
You wouldn't be very productive.
What?
You would not be very productive.
Because?
You'd be sitting there in awe.
Correct. So the answer is, you're supposed to sense and intellectually know God. But there's a difference between knowing God and experiencing God. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, not really. Not really. I'm not...
Seems like not everyone can handle it.
And how are you going to know the experience?
That's what happened to him at Sarnia, right?
You'd know. Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
So if I feel I did with a particular situation, and I related to Henry, and he looks at me like, you know, like, you know?
One more time?
I said, if something happens, and I say I feel that this was the power of Shem relating to me a certain situation, you know, how it comes back.
No, I don't think, that's not what I'm talking about. One second, let me see if I can find it. I'm looking for something, I have to see if I can find it. Here. Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No. I'll find it next week, I think. The Rambam says somewhere. Here. Where are you going to find it? Here we are. The Rambam says, first you should know me. Sori hadat, leida shayal mi nabe al b'nei ha'adam. God gives prophecy to people. Who gets prophecy? First you have to be wise. You have to be a strong person in your attributes. A gibor, not strong, but a strong person in your midos. You can't let your yetzer overcome you. Rather, you overcome your yetzer. You have to be an intelligent person. Adam shehu memula b'chol hamidot ha'elu. A person who has all these attributes, you know, he got all the qualities. Shalem begufo, right? He is full of his guf in his body also. Kishayikanes lepardes. when you enter into the Pardes, what is Pardes? Pardes is an orchard, but it's a reference. What does Pardes mean? It was an acronym for? Good. What does it mean? Acronym for Pshat, Remez, Drash, Sod. So when you enter into the Pardes, he explains, to try to understand deep stuff, and you engage in those things, V'tiyelo de'a mechona, lahavinu lahasig, and you get it, you start to understand, humitkadesh v'holech, then you become holier and go on, uporesh midarche klal ha'am. Right? And you're separating yourself now from the ways of the nation. One second. I'm not going to read the whole thing.
That's what you talk about when you start Kabbalah.
Right.
Then he says, the Rambam says something very controversial. The Rambam says a person can raise himself to the level of a Navi. You could become a prophet. You could raise yourself to that level where you can have a tangible sense of God awareness. And you could become, there are little Navis and there are big Navis.
But that's not what these people were doing.
Some people are giving it.
I'm saying, but here in
Shmuel had it.
Okay.
So if you have it, then you can. I don't know, zap somebody else with whatever that is, with that sense of God awareness.
Now I can't imagine the people who are coming to kill David.
Correct.
Had those attributes.
Good. And what would
deserve?
What would happen if you all of a sudden got that God awareness?
And you weren't ready for it.
Correct.
Go crazy.
Overload.
I don't know if it would go crazy. It would paralyze you. You would not be able to. It would overload you. And that's exactly what happens. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I don't know if I'm explaining it well enough. You know, here we believe that God is here. We believe that God is with us. We believe that God runs the world. But it's a belief, right? It's not a sense of spiritual awareness that we have. We don't feel it. We don't sense it. We don't have it. And the greater sense of nevuah you have, the greater prophecy you have, the stronger that becomes. So even if you have it in the most minute sense, if you were to feel it, and not like, oh, you know, I've also felt that God is sort of leading my life, but I've never had that, I mean, I'm not happy. You've never had that sense that you could feel God. You know what I'm saying? In a very real way, that you would raise yourself to that level, that you could tangibly feel God. Shmuel was there. He was a Navi. Shaul had had that before. Shaul was a great man, in a sense. Shmuel was able to zap these guys who came so that the Spirit rested upon them and they became paralyzed. But the Spirit that rests upon them is very different than the Spirit that rests upon David. On Shaul, excuse me. What happens when it comes to Shaul? He gets real prophecy. He prophesizes. He senses God. Now what happens to a Shaul when he prophesizes and all of a sudden feels God? What happens to him?
Can't take it.
What do you mean can't take it? Why? He could take it. So let's understand. The soul is a great man. But we don't like the things that he's doing because he's being overcome by this sense of melancholy, this depression, this whatever you want to call it. He's a great man. So he could take it. Meaning the other guys, they're zapped. Shaul gets it. It says, and you see what it says. It says, he prophesizes all day and all night. Right? He took off, I mean, he immediately senses. He takes off his king's thing and he puts on his, the way Rashi says, his student's frock. Because he realizes that in the presence of Shmuel, he's nothing. What's his prophecy telling him? When you sense God, you sense truth. You sense oneness. You sense the correct. You sense everything that's right in the world that's correct. So what does he sense?
That he's wrong?
Yeah. He senses that everything that's motivating him is absolutely incorrect. Like this sense, and you see he's like rolling around. He's, you know, Vayipol Aron gives me, there's a sense of mourning. Who am I to be the king? What am I doing? You know, and, you know, you have these flashes of lucidity in the darkness that he's going through. And you can only imagine the torment that he goes through when he has this prophecy. But on the one hand, he's motivated by this hatred of David. But on the other hand, he has this prophecy and he sees, you know, like in this day of light, He sees I'm trying to kill the most beautiful soul in Israel. This is an unbelievable conflict going on here. There's David, doesn't know what's going on. Saul trying to kill David, and then Saul, one gets the sense, hating himself for trying to kill David, but unable to stop himself. Pretty scary stuff. Okay. That's the end of the chapter. Questions? None? We're all good? Okay, last week I pointed out some similarities between Saul and Laban. But today I want to point out some similarities, not between Saul and Laban, but between David and Yaakov. And we're going to see that as the author of the book, of Shmuel, writes it, there are explicit similarities. We have to try to figure out what the similarities are there for. Okay? So I'm just going to show you two examples, and then I'm going to quote you about 10 similarities between the stories. Okay? Reishi, Perek Chaf 10. Vayomer Yaakov el Lavan. Hava es ishti ki mal'u yamai va'avoa eleha. Right? Remember, Yaakov wants to marry Rachel. Lavan says, sure, no problem. All you got to do is work for 7 years. So at the end of 7 years, Yaakov says to Laban, no problem, give me my wife, Hava es isti. Give her over. Ki mal'u yamai. Yom Laban. So Laban says, skip a little. So but Laban cheats Yaakov. Right? He gives her Leah. So Yaakov comes screaming at him in the morning, what have you done, you jerk? Pasuk Havav. Yom Laban. Lo ye asechem min kamenu lateta chi'ira lifdea bechira. Chavzayin. Malay Shavu Azos, all you gotta do is fill another 7 years. Actually, it is a week. V'yinalacha gamzot ba'avoda asher tavodi madiyot shav asharim acheron. One more week, at the end of a week, no problem, you can marry the other one. Pasuk Havchet, v'yas Yaakov ken, v'yimalay Shavu Azot, v'yitein lo'ad Rachel bitao le'isha. So you see the word, I highlighted it for you, you can see it quite clearly. The word l'malot, to fill, is unusual. You could think of other words that would appear. It's unusual, and it was repetitive. Okay? What about in our Parsha? Okay? Look at the last chapter, Pasuk Perek Yud Chet, Pasuk Chavav. Vayagidu avadav David et advarim ha'ela. They told David, what does Saul want? Saul wants you to kill 100 Plishtim. Vayishar ha'davar b'einei David hitchaten b'melech v'lo mal'u hayamim. And the days were not mal'u, filled. What does that mean? What does it mean contextually? It means it didn't take them long to do. But it's interesting to note, you notice right away, that the days, the yamim, were mal'u. See, that the word that appeared in the story of Yaakov, that was interesting. So whoever wrote the Navi clearly knew and used the same word. Not only use it once, use it twice. Chavzayin. Vayakom David, vayelachu va'anashav. So David got up. He and his men, Vayachra Plishim Basayimish, remember he killed 200 Plishim. Vayave David Alatahem, Vayimalum Lamelech Vayitchatein Lamelech. Vayimalum, he completed, he fulfilled the wish. Vayitaino Shaul et Michal Bitol Isha. So when you see language like that, textually, it's making a clear connection between one story and another. You see that, you say, there's a connection between the story of Yaakov marrying Rachel and the story of David marrying Michal. Another example. What do we see later on? This is next week's Parsha, next week I think, 2 weeks. If you remember, Yaakov finally decides he's had enough of his father-in-law and he decides he's going home. What happens when he goes home? His wife, Rachel, what does she take with her? Lama Dalit. What do they call it in Hebrew? Rachel lacha et hatrafim. They're statues, they're idols. Rachel took the trafim, but she named the kar hagamal, she put him in the camel thing, she sat on them, Lavan is searching, interestingly, he searches the whole tent and can't find it. She says to her father, sorry dad, I can't get up, The way of women, what does she mean? It's that time of the month. Okay? So I'm sorry, Dad, I can't get up. He searches and can't find a trophy. See that word? See, the word trafim appears in both cases. The word lemalot appears in both cases. So clearly... Correct. Now, when the words appear in the Chumash, that's one thing. You have to figure out what does trafim mean. When you use the word trafim to mean a statue, see, how do we know what the word trafim, the trafim mean in Shmuel? How do you know what it means? How do you know what a word means anywhere? What are trafim? I'll give you a question. Bradley, you find a word in Tanakh, you don't know what it means. What are your ways of figuring out what it means?
Shoresh.
Great. What's another way of figuring out what it means?
Context.
Prior usage.
And prior usage. Great. Those are correct. So now, shoresh, trafim, I don't know. Context. What would it mean here in the context? In our case, in the Navi, what would trafi mean in context?
Mannequins,
statues. Prior usage?
Idols.
Idols. Can it mean idols?
Apparently so.
No.
Can it mean idols? Can it mean that Michal has an idol?
Not in this case.
What?
We wouldn't think so.
You would hope not. Now, you'd hope that David marrying his, you know, wife wouldn't have idols. It's interesting. Some Mepharshim say she used it not as an idol, but as a, what's the word? Like a Ouija board, maybe? Well, right. Like a, not a voodoo doll.
Good luck charm.
A good luck charm. Like a mascot kind
of
thing.
Are you saying
that Rachel did have statues? No, where did Rachel get the
statues from? It was a
she stole it from her father. Right. But what I'm showing you is, it's an unusual word to use here. You could have called it anything. So the fact that our Navi calls it trafim is saying to you, is screaming out to you, do me a favor, I want you to know the similarities between that story and this story. Okay? And there are many of them. List me some similarities to the story of Yaakov and the story of Laban. I have 11. Somebody give me one. Story of Yaakov and the story of David.
Work for his wife.
What?
The wife.
He had to work for his wife.
Switch wives on him.
Switch wives on him. So including in that, two daughters. Right? There was Rachel and Leah, and this woman, Merav and Michal. Okay? Number three. Both Laban and Shaul have no respect for their deal makers, for their deals. Right? Laban makes a deal with Yaakov and says, sure, you can marry the younger daughter. And what does he do? The old switcheroo. Right? Remember last week, what did Shaul do to David? You want to marry Merav? Sorry, you can't. Already set her up. What can you do? Okay? Both of them give the older sister instead of the younger one. They try to give the older sister. David loves Michal, take Merav. No, whatever. Both Yaakov and David have to work twice in order to get what they want. Yaakov has to work an extra 7 years. What does David have to do twice? To get his wife? What's twice? Kill more pleasing. What was the first one?
Kill Goliath.
Yeah, you kill Goliath. Say, get in my wife. Sorry.
You know what that is?
No. Right. Number six. Both Yaakov and David love the younger one. Right? Yaakov loves Rachel, and David and Michal get along pretty well. Number seven. They both pay a crazy amount to get married. Number eight. In both stories, the relationship gets so rocky that the son-in-law actually runs away from his father. Number nine. In both cases, the daughter tricks or lies to her father. And both of those are involved in trafim. Right? Rachel lies to her father. What does she lie about? Sorry, Dan, can't get up. Right? And she's hiding the trafim. And what does Michal do? She tricks her father. Again with trafim. So now, those are nine similarities. I had another one. I just found another one. Anybody have any else? I got pretty much hit most of them. Nine similarities between the two stories. So the question you have to ask yourself is, what do you do with that? You know, it's very nice to point out similarities. What do you do with it? I'll show you a very interesting one. Last one, the Midrash. Do you have the Midrash on the bottom there? Oh, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Let's skip to the... See where it says, Hitchil Ko'esh Aleha, at the beginning of the line? About six lines from the bottom. Hitchil Ko'esh Aleha. Dad, you got it? Hitchil Ko'esh Aleha. Shaul, it's the middle of discussion between Shaul and Michal. He got mad at her. Kachri mitani v'hivrach et sonai. You no good for nothing, daughter. You lied to me. You let my enemy get away. Amalo, Michal l'Shaul. Michal said to him, Im ad netatani m'satani l'listim shalcha. You did it to me. You're the one that married me off to that thief. Ve'amar alayim hacherav lahardeni. And he stood upon me. He wanted to kill me. If you don't get me out of here, I'm going to cut off your head. My blood got cold. I got afraid, Dad. He dragged him and I helped him run away. And I did it because I was so afraid. As it is written, the Queen Esther shuddered a lot. Melamed shepirsa nida. It teaches you that she became a nida. Like who?
Rachel.
Pretty wacky midrash. Until you realize that the reason why you want to say that Michal became a nida is because Rachel also said she was a nida.
What's a nida?
Nida means she got menstruating.
Oh, right.
What do you do with it? I set the table before you. What do you do with all these similarities between the story of Yaakov and the story of David? What in the world, and I'll ask it this way. The writer of the Navi is setting you up to try to show you these similarities. Right? So now that I pointed out to you, does anybody disagree that they're there? You see, now that I pointed out to you, they're all there. Right? What do you do with it? What are you supposed to get from there? What is he trying to convey? I'm getting blank stares. Anyone?
History repeats itself.
Or...
The best comes to those who wait or put in their time, their effort to earn...
I'll take it one step farther. I'm going in that direction. Yaakov Avinu didn't become Yaakov Avinu because he was born as Yaakov Avinu.
He had to go through a lot of trials.
Correct. He went through a tremendous amount of suffering and trials and difficulty to become Yaakov Avinu. You don't grow that way. You struggle, and people cheat you, and they take advantage of you, and you learn, and you grow. Right? He was born the son of Yitzchak. He was born the grandson of Avraham Avinu. But you don't get it just because, you know, Yitzchak is who he is because he was born that way. And that's what he's supposed to be. But Yaakov has to grow to become something more. He has to grow to become the father who all of his children become the sons of Israel. You want to become a leader? You want to become the new beginning of a new history?
That's what David is.
That's what David is. It doesn't happen on its own. And I sort of alluded to this before when I said that God put the Spirit onto Shaul. Yeah. Is there a risk? Is there a possibility that David would get killed? In a very real way, yes. But David has to, how should we say this, run the gauntlet in a sense, in order to become the person who can grow to become the real king of Israel, to become David Melech Yisrael. And it's not enough for Shaul to, you know, Shaul dies, and oh, here's David, I'm seeing new kid. Because then he wouldn't be David HaMelech. And part of becoming a leader is suffering, and dealing with politics, and trying to find your way, and being persecuted. All of those things. Things that Yaakov learned, and in a sense, things that David had to learn too. Right? Both of them God wanted them to begin something anew, to create something great, something everlasting, something eternal. Yaakov did his, and one gets the sense that the author is trying to convey that the things that happened to David aren't just happenstance, aren't just bad luck, but they're necessary in order for him to become the person he needs to become. And without a doubt, the suffering he endures early in life makes him a different person when he becomes the king. And, you know, makes him the king that he's going to become later on. And I think that, you know, it's hard to take a philosophical look on your life and say the same thing. But it's true for all of us as well. You know, nobody wants to suffer. But the suffering that we undergo And the difficulties we endure, when we endure them, make us better people and make us different people, make us stronger people. And if David hadn't gone through what he goes through, then he won't have the future that he ultimately has. So it's an idea. It's a suggestion. Okay, see you next week.